put words into the end of it.
Can we have everybody's attention, please?
Yeah, count of the people that I think are subject committee members. I'll read your names, and then if I did not count you, and you think you're one of the subject committee, please let me know. Dean Ahmad, James Angeletti, Eric Wick, Bill Bavell, myself, Mark Moranis, James Harris, Doug Johnston, Jack Jones, Ron King, Mike Linder, Sean Quinn, Bill Snyder, George Chins, Tim Sutton, Leo Domowski, Scott Spencer, Tony Spiegel, Arvin Borla, and Colleen Gwen. Did I miss anybody in the central committee?
Thomas Westwood. R-E-S-S-O-R.
He's a member and he took the pledge last week at the meeting at the
Oh, okay, so nobody told.
Yeah. I'll bounce him because you know he gave me the money and took the money. Consisting of the picnic at Arvin's. That was the last full central committee last summer in July. We also had special central committee minutes of the meeting at Stu's in November, which was for nominating candidates, and also minutes for last week's meeting at Stu's for the purpose of nominating candidates. Does anybody, there are also, I passed out links last night on the email list. Does anybody have any adjustments or corrections to be made to the minutes at the Arvin's picnic last summer in July? Does anybody have any corrections or adjustments to be made to the minutes on the meeting at Stu's in November? Does anybody have any corrections or adjustments to the minutes at the meeting at Stu's last week?
Were those posted? They were.
I couldn't hear that.
Yes, if they were posted, though, the ones last week.
I didn't post them.
Okay. Could you read them?
I don't know that I have them.
Okay. I mean, then we can postpone.
No. Here. Let Eric read them.
This is just the program.
Okay. These are the minutes of the Central Committee meeting of the Libertarian Party. Saturday, 29th of March, 2014, we opened. Let's see, Libertarian State Central Committee of Maryland met at Stu Sims' house in Laurel, Maryland for a special meeting for the purpose of the nominations. The meeting was called to order at 12:22 p.m. by Chairman Bob Johnson. Attendance. The Credentials Committee validated 14 Central Committee members were in attendance for the meeting. Three proxies were represented. The Central Committee roles consist of 33 members. Nominations of candidates for office. David Scambalone was nominated for Anne Arundel County Council in the 2nd District. The nomination was by Eric Litz, seconded by Mark Granis. David made a brief presentation and took questions from the floor. The vote was unanimous in favor of the nomination by voice vote. Stephen Haddix was nominated for the House of Representatives in the 8th Congressional District. The nomination was by Gerald Schneider, seconded by Stuart Sims. Stephen made a brief presentation and took questions from the floor. The vote was unanimous in favor of the nomination by voice vote. Peggy O'Donnell was nominated for the Calvert County Board of County Commissioners in the 2nd District. The nomination was by Gerald Schneider, seconded by Stuart Sims. Peggy made a brief presentation and took questions from the floor. The vote was unanimous in favor of the nomination by voice vote. The meeting adjourned at 1:25 p.m., and I was acting as the fill-in secretary for that meeting.
Any adjustments or corrections to be made to those minutes?
I move the minutes to be accepted as read.
Second.
Any objection? So moved, minutes are accepted. The treasurer's report. Everyone should have a copy of the treasurer's report on the flip side of the agenda. Please raise your hand. Let me know if you do not have a copy of the treasurer's report and agenda. Mr. Linder.
Thank you, Bob. I guess I'll let people have a chance to read it. It's pretty much self-explanatory about what our income was. We've had since the picnic were mainly to the news I posted associated with and paying post office off for their use. That's about the only thing to say to it. That was a question about something there. Give some money to put in our federal account, and we'll give some money to put in our administrative account. So, specifically, that way. We're running about $6,800 what we have right now. But that will soon decrease. We don't pay for this.
Keep them on.
You have a rough idea what the cost is?
Yes. About $1,300. Well, we've been paying about 35 people the last 3 years. For 1,300, 1,400, we've been paying about deposits.
Just a typo, but general account balance, closing balance, that period.
I know you're right. That was guaranteed.
Any other questions for Mr. Linder? Mr. Spencer?
I just have one more question. So the federal account balance went up, but there was no contribution to the
account. When you give me a check, I have the option of putting it in a free account. And Joe, I can put it down. If you hand me one that says put this in a federal account, that requires me to start, well, effective the federal bill, put it in a federal. If you hand one that says put administrative. Now, remember, giving us just $4,000 on the computer side. General, you give me an unlimited amount, but in the administrative, which is like toilet paper, electricity, office rent, salaries, employees, things like that. You know, Angela gave $25,000 for Democratic Party, so it's an option we have. So what they're trying to do with administrative is really follow the party in the State Board of Elections, because that paper, like printing, postage, things you run in the office with our telephone. Make fun of Mr. Gray to really start to follow that pretty well. So, the other party thing too. So.
This is a discretionary.
Correct.
Mr. Bazell.
I believe the bylaws still require on the pledge money to return a certain percentage of that money to the jurisdiction from which it came. I'd like to know when that's going to begin.
I don't know the bylaws, we can say the policy at that point. Well, let's get together and do the calculations, Bill, about how many people in the month, the county, county committee, they should devote, except for the Baltimore County one, to basically count how many people. I can live in Baltimore County and plus monthly contributors and calculate how much we're going to do the Baltimore Census Committee meeting. So I guess you still technically exist, correct?
Baltimore City and County is a combined group, so anybody from either of those is a current pledger. Some of that money should be coming back to the jurisdiction.
$5 for every $20 member.
So my question on that is, what's that money doing in those committees?
It's going back to our group to buy space to hold a meeting from a library or to have a picnic in one of the parks, or And also, right now, we've changed procedures. Well, the banks pretty changed procedures. We used to have a free checking account. It was a business account, and the bank decided, well, it wasn't a good idea, and they decided to charge us $10 a month for our account if we kept the paper, and $5 a month for our account if we went paperless. So we're paperless right now. So I've got money going out. I've got to get some money coming in.
Any other questions for Mr.
Linder?
What was the answer to his question?
His question was, what was the purpose of having the...
No, I mean the original question.
Oh, your question.
What
is
the answer to your question?
Well, I said, we need it. Well, you need to go back and calculate how much from what the figures was, how much we said we did. Now, over the years, we've also given money to the Baltimore Central Committee to fund some activities. What we said we'd give them $5 out of every 20 for a person who resided in Baltimore County or city for a year, and we did it for the longest time for every county central committee. We just stopped doing and started funding some of their outreach efforts, so because we paid for like the House of Towns as well. It was the
Baltimore
Friday and things like that, so see how much we owe to Baltimore.
So the
executive
committee suspended the regular payments
because of
special payments?
Well, county, kind of, he never really streamed forth the time saying, how do you owe me? So now he gets running out of money,
he's going to start streaming.
So.
Now
that he wants to start funding his activities.
That's what treasurers do.
Mr. Tyler. Yeah, I don't want this to sound like nepotism or whatnot. So when I look at the check and brush fees and things like that, we have someone here who has something that may be able to save the money. That's his thing, his own business operation. And I think we ought to look at that, at least to see if collection fees could be lower.
It is something we have discussed at past executive board meetings. Any other questions? Tina Bond.
I move that the treasurer's report be accepted subject to correction of typos.
Is there any objections to accepting the treasurer's report?
Subject to what?
The typo.
Correcting the typo.
What typo?
Double
period.
Only
he told
us that.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Linder. The chair's report. Who here is not aware that we have a new state party website? I would like the person who did most of the work on it, Mr. Granis, to, if you would briefly discuss the new website, please.
Sure. So we have a new website. It has a new URL. It is lpmaryland.org. The animating theory of this is to make everything more shareable and to encourage more digital promiscuity. We also went out and got a little graphics help. And so when you go to the site, you'll notice a new logo and a new color palette. There is... pretty much all the same material that was on the old site, but reorganized in a way that I think is, let's say, optimized for people who are non-libertarians who are coming to our site for the first time wanting to learn more about us. But everything that used to be there is still there, and you can still find it. Yes, Bill?
Yeah, the, when you said LP Maryland, is that MZ or is it spelled out Maryland?
Spelled out Maryland, lpmaryland.org, yeah. There is a blog there. Eric Lutz has graciously agreed to help keep some new posts coming out on the blog. Some of the content is, short and sweet, like the quote of the day or something like that. And some of it is longer and more detailed. Eric did a fine post analyzing the various marijuana legislation that was in the General Assembly this year. And, you know, and there are things like that from time to time. It's set up so that it automatically kicks posts out to our Facebook page, which now has 578 likes, I think, to make it more shareable. Of course, that's really only an advantage if we share. So I'd like to encourage everyone to do that. The other thing that's good is that you can subscribe to blog posts, which will give you all of the information that's currently going out on the listserv, and then some. Because we're taking listserv items now and posting them right to the blog. So if you go to the website, and in fact, you can, if you want to come over here at a break, I will happily do the keystrokes for you. You can put your email address into the subscription module, and you will automatically get every new post that goes out on the website. You won't get notice about, you know, we took the second period of the Treasurer's Report or something like that, but you'll get notice on every new substantive post that comes out. And I think that this has been something that you have in your email box that you can forward on to someone else, because for all the reasons that Arvin explained so well in the last session, this is really a great way for us to sort of proselytize without appearing to proselytize. You can pass things on to your Facebook friends. You can retweet any Twitter feed. We also do have to, most of us do make it to our Twitter feed as well. So this is an initiative to try and make us more digitally promiscuous, and so far so good, I think, although it's only been a week, I think, since National started redirecting the traffic, but so far so good.
I think Mark and Eric helped out, and Perisphere, the company that did the logo work, did an excellent job. I think it's probably the most attractive state party website out there, and I think it's fabulous. I would also like to thank Dr. Glazer, who maintained the old website for years. Probably nobody has been more meticulous with his notes, his minutes, and updating it than Robert Glazer did. I, from time to time, was like, God, it's really amazing. There are some that are pushing their 2012 candidates, their 2013 convention. Robert had stuff up that night when we have something, and did a great, he's always done a great job with it. So kudos to both of you gentlemen. Thank you, Mark. We have been more aggressive in getting involved in Annapolis with the General Assembly. The Marijuana Policy Coalition contacted us, Sam Formanti, to sign on and get involved with their efforts. Mr. Granis wrote a statement out to get involved on their website. Leo Domowski went down and spoke in favor of one of the decriminalization bills in front of the General Assembly. So going back again to the coalition, this is a good way to get more and more out there. There's a ballot access bill that has been in the General Assembly, which Mr. Bliss and Doug McNeil spoke for lowering the threshold of maintaining ballot access to 10,000 registered voters. If that had passed, we would automatically be a party since we have over 13,000. Eric, would you like to speak a minute or about the status of that bill?
Well, it's been put in the drawer in committee, which means it's never going to get out of committee. The chairperson was not particularly impressed, but he's very partisan. However, it's a first step to building. We'll reintroduce that bill every year until we get there. We've been talking with people. Stu was mentioning how we eventually went from 3% down to a 1% threshold, and that took putting that bill in for 4 years straight before it got done. So we'll just keep at it. Next year we'll have a slightly different approach, because we kind of came in on the effort with the Green Party a little bit toward the end, but what we're going to do is target the delegates for the committee, where it's going to go beforehand with some requests for meetings. So we actually go and do face-to-face conversations with them, to the extent that they'll allow us. A gentleman who, Mayor Ron Young out of Frederick, who has been a kind of a nemesis of mine for a lot of reasons in local government law for a very long time. He's on the committee, and he quickly said a lot of negative comments, and he'll probably work as actively as anybody to stop it. We had interesting comments, you know, with one person who quite frankly, I don't think they'd ever heard what a libertarian was, which is a little hard to imagine in this day and age, but they're basically asking, why don't you guys just join the other parties? And what is it about the other parties that isn't meeting your needs? Or something like that.
Who's that?
I don't remember her name. Offhand, I'll get it to you.
Which committee was this?
It is House Education and Education, Labor, and something like that. Why that bill was sent there is strange, but that's where it sits.
What, education, health,
it is environment.
EHE?
Yeah, I guess.
Environmental health and education?
Yeah. So, Senator Ferguson was nice enough to put in that bill for, and work with the Green Party as well. And we're going to work with the Green Party on next year's effort.
Somebody else to put it in next year, it'll get the committee.
It might. Yes, we need co-sponsors in. So, if it was a first step effort, we'll continue. Thank you, Mr. Blitz. Obviously, if we can get Sean to get 1% in the governor's race.
Let's stop the talk of 1%. Okay, we want 2 million voters. That's what we're shooting for. I don't want to hear anything less than 2 million.
You'll save, so do that, 2 million voters, so that you can save me from having to go to
the other side. There you go,
Eric. By the way, on the marijuana bill, just to let you all know, I mean, it's actually happening as we speak, where what happened on the decriminalization bill was that it has a very strong opponent in Valerio, in his committee. And what he did, which is a very typical move in the General Assembly, is to change the substance of the bill to a bill that would study marijuana reform.
Yeah.
You know, kick it to a study. Well, I've got to hand it to the House Black Caucus, who has taken up this effort very strongly, because in the coalition is the ACLU of Maryland and the NAACP of Maryland. Those are two really big powerhouses as far as influence in Maryland. Now, it's nice to see the Libertarian Party logo right next to those two organizations and others. We've got LEAP and SFCP and all in Normal, all the ones you'd expect. But the Black Caucus said, no, we're not putting up with that maneuver. And what they did was convince it to be amended in the House. And I've learned from him that what they really did was then take it back to the Judiciary Committee, which this just happened a couple hours ago, and got it out of the Judiciary Committee. That's very beneficial, because what it says is they conferenced, they got together, and Valerio agreed to allow it to go to vote. There's a lot of members in the House who would not vote in favor if the committee had not let it go, because they believe in the committee system. Well, that means, and Tim, do you have any updates?
It's still debating.
Still up for debate. So as we
see song references ongoing.
There we go. We know that. But, you know, the Senate's already passed this bill. It might not get passed O'Malley, because he wants to run for president, or at least is putting his toe in the waters, and he's got a bunch of other things which, on the national scene, are kind of liberal-oriented things, and he's worried about having to get somewhere close to the center. And has said he's not really in favor. However, he said that statement before the Senate and the House passed it. It's not a perfect bill by any means. The better, much better bill from a libertarian perspective was the legalization bill, which Senator Rackin put in, which was a great bill. Well, good. The reason maybe you don't want to hear more about this.
I'd like to talk about it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Linder. Mr. Linder.
If I may ask Eric a question, are there any competing, or is it a subject of dropping the spreading 10,000 and just continuing the party on the top? Are there any competing bills or amendments to a law somewhere that would, you know, compete for the committee's attention?
Not on that subject. I mean, on ballot access.
Ballot access. I mean, is there someone thinking of some other grand idea that we're going to have?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, basically, kudos again to Senator Ferguson for sponsoring this bill. Senator Raskin has been good with us. Andy Harris, when he was in the State General Assembly, had been good on ballot access also. So, speaking of that, again, we need to get a minimum of 1% in the gubernatorial race to maintain our ballot access. It appears that the Constitution Party is not going to petition to get on the ballot. The Greens, surprisingly, did not even put up a paper candidate for their gubernatorial candidate. So, you know, unless this bill somehow gets out of committee and gets passed, which it probably is not, they're going to lose ballot access and have to petition. So we have a good opportunity. This would be the first time in at least 50 years that a non-establishment party in Maryland could get retain ballot access, because no one has ever gotten 1% in at least the last 50 years, and I think, according to Richard Winger, it's probably been World War II.
We're the only one.
Yeah, Maryland, third-party results are very poor, no question about it, compared to other states. Our membership is at 83 right now. Our registered voter amount, 13,549. Mr. Sims, if you take a minute or so to chat about the trends.
Yeah, I actually printed some of these out, so if anybody wants to look or anyone wants to take. But in general, we are really kind of aiming. I mean, I know the percentages are low, but in off-year, off-cycle elections, the fact that we're gaining registrations while other parties are losing is huge. But one of the numbers that kind of stood out at me was where we were 4 years ago, which is the cycle. And we're up 69% in terms of registration into the LP in Maryland. I think a lot of that is just organic stuff. I mean, people are finding out about us, especially younger people in this town. It's not my father's Democrat Party or whatever. So, I'll pass some of these out. I'll pass them all out.
Yes, and I have mentioned this in prior emails. Interestingly enough, the Green Party, they were one ahead of us, I think it was in March of 2010, 8106 to 8105. I don't think they've increased more than a couple hundred.
Actually, I happen to have that figure. This is March of 2010.
Okay.
Green Party is up less than 300 registrants than this time 4 years ago.
So we're up by, what, 5,500?
And we're up by 5,500. So, part of the thing about the Green Party is they're probably feeling like, well, they have their say within the Democrat Party. I think that there's some element of that.
I think they're only running one candidate, and that's George Gluck in the 6th Congressional District of Bongino, John Delaney race. I think that's the only candidate they're running, interestingly enough. So we have a real good opportunity to truly position ourselves as the alternative to the establishment. We live in a state that's 2-1 registered Democrats. They control all the statewide seats. They can barely pass a decriminalization bill. So this is a great opportunity to get our foot in the door, on this issue. Does anybody have any questions? Hearing none, Mr. Blitz. Now Mr. Spencer.
Yeah, I just have one question.
Sure.
What efforts are going on right now to convert some of these new registrants into the state party?
Well, that's sort of an interesting question.
Is of yet nothing.
Because okay. I know our numbers in national are quite a bit.
Yeah.
But our national numbers, I want to say, are over 390.
I agree. And that's low-hanging fruit. Now with the convention off my plate, that is something, I'll have time to attack, and I agree with you. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Oh, Mr. Grantis.
Just a quick comment on that. This is also another area where shareability and getting people online helps. It's never been easier to change your registration to Libertarian and Minimalist in the last July when the state implemented online voter registration. I realized just earlier this week that my daughter, who will be 18 before the next election, can register to vote right now. So I told her that. She's like, great, let me get on. She registered Libertarian. you actually can, this is a good time, especially after the primary, when people are done, voting in the voting primary, and they're they're disappointed that there's not going to be a Liberty candidate on the ballot in November, this is a great time to reach out to people and say, switch. Just switch now. Why don't you have a horse you can ride all the way to November? And people can actually do that on the spur of the moment. So online is a great way to do that.
Mr. Speedfield.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Something I brought up with Leo, and I'm going to bring up with everyone else, with all the activity that's going on, I mean, with various outreach events, besides the festivals, we could also do maybe a couple of gun shows here and there. I mean, have our tables set up and so forth. So I'll try to keep my ear to the
ground.
Yeah, it's what's going on. Thank you. And do what I have to.
We did have the filing deadline in Maryland was pushed up 6 weeks. It used to be the first Tuesday in April. Now it's the last Tuesday in February, which made it much more difficult to recruit candidates. We were a year off a presidential election, and I've got to go out and try and get more people to run. It really has become a grind just with the earlier and earlier and earlier filing deadline. So. We have candidates for 3 of the U.S. House, 8 U.S. House seats, and kudos to all of you who are running. I was hoping we could get more, so be it. Furthermore, I'm also more focused on the gubernatorial race this year. So, any other questions? Okay, the program committee, Mr. Blitz.
Okay, first I want to just thank all the people that participated in the program committee. It is always a difficult time to go through the process where you're trying to build consensus. And we spent 3 hours last Saturday building that consensus. So we've got recommendations that I've attached to the 6-page document. And the first page and a half are all of the recommendations for changes of the committee, and then what we do is break them up, just like we did last year, into 13 separate votes. And what we'll do is I'll review each vote, and that way you can ask questions, but these are all up and down votes. And I'm going to start with the substantive ones, because most of the changes that we're making are for the purposes of clarity, better exposition, better wordsmithing, I guess. So we try to vote those by section. The substantive ones are those that we felt are really changing either by addition or subtraction elements of our proposed program. Also remember that I believe last year, maybe the year before, the effort was to make these as bullet points. So this is different than the way the National Libertarian Party platform is, where each section gets a whole long paragraph, and it's a better exposition, but this is really more for marketing our ideas so that they go into a website, pamphlet, one-page leaflet, those kind of things. So the first one is on healthcare. We noticed there wasn't anything on our inner platform or program about healthcare, and considering that's a very topical debate, we wanted to add it. So the provision is to add one. It says healthcare, and you can read it. It says promote a free market system that respects the freedom of individuals to control their own healthcare, health insurance, medicines, and treatments. And then it says end government mandates and interference. We understand that this is just a bullet point. It's not. In Maryland, we want the candidates to be able to, explain. So I can take any questions on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any questions on that?
Okay. Hearing none.
We just
take.
Are we going to go through the whole thing before we do any voting?
May I suggest we vote, for each one.
For each one. Okay,
yeah.
Then I'll move each step.
A second.
Okay. Is there any objection to accepting the healthcare recommendation? All right. So move next.
Okay, the next one is asset forfeiture. We wanted it much simpler and less argumentative. You'll see that we took out most of the provision because we felt that it was convoluted and wasn't really good at explaining to somebody who's not really versed in libertarian thought on asset forfeiture. So all it does is get rid of everything and replace it with end pre-conviction asset forfeiture, period, without trying to be making distinctions which the previous provision said, until property owner has been properly convicted of a crime in the judicial system, seizure of property before conviction is an un-American policy of guilty until proven innocent. Well, we remove that kind of argumentative phrase. So we're just saying end all pre-conviction asset forfeiture. Any questions? Any discussion?
Come on.
Hearing none, is there any objection to passing this? Okay, so move next. Okay. Not the fountain. So we wanted a statement to be added to the jobs and wealth creation that was targeted towards small business employee and startup and small business employers. One of my projects for 2014 is to start doing outreach to local businesses, and I wanted something in the program that addressed them. And the reason for that, just so you know, the purpose behind outreach is the Republicans and Democrats have the ability to put signs for their campaign on commercial structures because they've got a whole coalition of small businesses and businesses that are tied to their interests. And they could put up hard signs, big signs. We don't have that. We're trying to do that in the campaign. It's brutal trying to get that done in campaign, you know, make that first contact. So, you know, we want to get those libertarian businesses or oriented businesses to at least be exposed to our message, so maybe they'll be willing to put our candidate signage up in their things, to put leaflets or things on their counters, because a lot of them are retail things. That helps. So that's what the effort is. So the idea here for this is to add the jobs and wealth creation, encourage entrepreneurs and small business startups by eliminating barriers to economic opportunity. Any discussion? Inamok.
I don't know if this is out of place, if you cannot do this, but I just say while I'm both for this, I would have been more comfortable if it said artificial barriers, since I can imagine the state is saying, oh, not having enough money is a barrier.
Any other discussion? Any objections to passing this amendment? So move next.
I wonder if we could revisit the second one real quick.
Sorry, Matt. Sorry.
Well, let's get that in. The program committee is pretty much, I don't know, ad hoc or whatever, but we're not really completely done. So if anybody wants to make a change for
the future, it's open. Post-conviction asset forfeiture, if you're convicted of having a few seeds of marijuana.
I already thought about that, and that's something that post-conviction, it also has to be appropriate response type penalty. So that's something that I've already done to address because more something that program could be.
Some of the things that we're dealing with this year are actually from things we couldn't get done and were based on suggestions, just like yours, from last year. So the next one is domestic spying. We're adding a bullet point, or proposing to add a bullet point to the state government that says, prohibit Maryland officials from funding or participating in domestic espionage and bulk data collection. Prohibit Maryland from using or maintaining such data except in accordance with a constitutionally proper warrant. This is, you stripped out, you know, kind of the nullification language, but it's essentially a nullification concept. There's about 15 states where these bills are pending. Some are very good, some are quite weak. And people differ on tactics. Some want to just kind of defund the whole thing. In Utah, there's an effort to turn off the water. And I think Maryland was essentially like a defunded by getting rid of the water. We're just trying to focus just on domestic bulk data collection and get that simple statement. For instance, any questions? Any discussion?
Any objection to passing this? Hearing none. Next.
Okay. This is a removal of a provision from our current program. In the state government article, it says in the second sentence, create and maintain single member districts to encourage politicians to be responsive to their constituents. We felt that we should, that there really wasn't a libertarian consensus on that. That's more of a pragmatic or prudential concern about how elections should be run. And some people believe that the multi-districts actually help. And so that was the rationale for taking it out, letting candidates, if they want to advocate for single member versus multi-member districts, to go ahead and advocate, but the party itself shouldn't kind of, from the top down, take that position. Any questions or comments or...
Yeah. What about the gerrymandering? Or do we cover that?
That is covered, but it's covered in the later section on changes to
okay.
Language.
All right.
So that is in that section, you're right. But it,
okay.
Did you have a question, Jeff?
No.
Okay. Tina Mott.
Yeah, I'd like a vote on this one simply because I do believe that in a program, pragmatic consideration should be taken into consideration.
Does anybody have more discussion on this issue? All those in favor of it? Mr. Grant?
Well, I guess it seems to me that even on pragmatic grounds, the small single member districts don't necessarily help it. That one very plausible scenario might be that in a three-member district, there are a couple of, you know, weak teams, you know, maybe with two strong candidates or and a third who's a little bit weak, and a very strong libertarian candidate might be able to get a spot by peeling off Democratic and Republican voters who will give one of their votes to a libertarian. And until our numbers are high enough for us to be able to mobilize a huge number of libertarian voters who are going to outweigh the Democrats and Republicans who don't know these people and are just sort of, you know, checking off the box, I think the best shot for us to get someone in is actually with the multi-member districts with a strong candidate who can say, I'm number three.
That's not been my experience. If there were a counterexample, it would have to be the Schneider campaign. Jerry's here. Jerry, do you think Mark's argument?
I'm really not sure. You could go either way.
Again, I agree it's not a hard line libertarian issue, but if you're going to have a Democratic government, I feel more comfortable with one that's close to the voter as possible.
If I could, I could add one thing. It was very helpful that I was the first non-Democratic or Republican candidate to get the NRA endorsement, which has never happened before or since. And they sent out everything in my zip code area to bullet ballot for me to make sure that no votes are siphoned off and only votes for me. They mentioned my name in every paragraph that they sent out. So bullet balloting was, I don't know how many votes I got out of it, but it might have contributed to the 1990s.
And I think the point is regarding his proposal is that even though Jerry was running in a multi-member district, it was because we were able to get that, you know, endorsement that we were able to sidestep what would have been otherwise a burden to him.
Okay. Let's think about it. All those in favor of this amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes. Amendment passes. Next.
Okay, the next one is also a removal from a current thing. This is the land value tax. It says, encourage efficient land use by reducing the tax on buildings and property improvements, leaving only assessments on land itself. You know, libertarians are all against all forms of taxation and then argue about what incremental steps are better. So we felt that having one element of our program that happened to favor the land value tax, where, you know, most people would be objecting to a program that said point that supported a consumption tax or a fair tax or any other particular tax, it was better to be neutral and let candidates take on that role and say what they wanted to do in practice, rather than having it part of the program, which is, you know, putting forth the land value tax. There's arguments in favor of the land value tax, just like there's arguments about every form of taxation back and forth, but we just felt that that should come out. There was dissent on this one by a number of people, and I think we'll start off with one of the best proponents of the land value tax.
Yeah, I'd just like to read this for people to consider beforehand. I would favor changing the LVT rather than dropping it. The LP needs a revenue policy that sets it apart from the Republicans and Democrats, yet has elements that each could favor. The possibility of user fees that I recall the LP pushing in the 1980s could be applied to natural resources such as land, fossil fuels, minerals, etc., have positive economic effects, and also have the possibility of leveling the economic playing field relative to the natural commonwealth, similar to the Alaskan oil dividend given to each citizen of Alaska. I would hope that the program can be expanded to cover all the possibilities of raising a government revenue sufficient to protect our rights and at the same time have positive rather than negative economic effects.
Did you want to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate Eric's question on it. The debate raised on this for,
hour or better.
half hour between the merits of the land value tax and it was all about pro and con. And in the end, there was a reason that I kind of turned to Eric and whoever was left and said, this is kind of why we need to remove this. Because there is such agreement within the party about whether land value tax should have almost a special mention, really, and rather leave it up to the individual candidates.
Mr. Keene.
I think it's a very important human right for an individual to be able to own a piece of land large enough to live on, large enough to put his possessions on, and have it be free of threat of confiscation by the government. And this is why I'm against the land tax.
The arguments that Stewart put forward would be more persuasive when we're talking about the platform for a program point. The fact is that there is, as Stewart is aware, there is a libertarian argument for the land value tax that was made by the inventor of the land value tax, who was a libertarian, Henry George. And the argument is that natural resources, land in particular, is the one thing of which you can make an argument for collective ownership. John Locke himself, when he argued that private property, the land should exist, said as long as there was enough and equal for others. Vaughan, in his defense of private property, was very careful to say, enough for an individual to live on, implicitly accepting Locke's premise. Now, while we can have an argument about whether ultimately land value in fact is libertarian or not, as a matter of program, it seems to me to say you want to replace the extremely unjust, unlibertarian, confiscatory taxes that we have on property that we construct with our own hands, with one on land that we didn't construct, that we just benefit from. I just don't see what the problem is. I'm perfectly happy.
More conversation on this issue. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
Let's take a hand vote. All those in favor, raise your hand. 11. All those opposed? It passes. 11 to 8.
I just want to quickly look. Did they quickly vote on the program?
Yes.
Okay. Make it sure. If you don't, then
he said it so quickly.
Next.
Okay. Now we get to minor changes. They're stylistic, or better words for things. So the first paragraph of our program. This proposal changes in the second line. To that end, if we would like to say we seek to elect libertarians, and then later on, Oh, yes, it gets rid of the word other in the second line, influence other. So that's the only two changes, very minor changes to the first paragraph.
If you change from if to we, then you're going to need to change the seek.
Yeah, it is in there. I'm sorry. My eyes are failing me. Any comments, questions on that? Bob, you want to call the vote?
Senator, is there any objection to passing that? So move, Nick.
Okay, under jobs and wealth creation, we make, four or five changes. In the first line, we make it specific. This is about taxes. They reduce government spending and lower the tax burden, so insert tax. And then we just end it there on Maryland taxpayers. We wanted to stop calling people taxpayers as if that's their role in life. the second line, we want to make it two separate sentences. It had been a kind of a long run-on sentence. Restructure the tax system to encourage growth, period. Then start it up as eliminate subsidies and special interest tax breaks. So we're adding interest. End that sentence there and get rid of to businesses. And then start off a new sentence. End public funding and financing. And we replace four with of. Stadiums, hotels, we got rid of concert halls because it was no longer topical, and we didn't like having et cetera in there. And then we wanted to explain a little bit about the kind of the libertarian premise here, and other facilities which are properly private activities, it's inserted. And that's it for the vote on this, but note that the bullet point of entrepreneurs would go at the end of this, which is already passed.
Discussion,
questions.
Third bullet point.
It's a lot easier on my computer screen. When it's red, all the text is red. Now I can barely read it. Oh, there you go. Affirmative action for old people.
These do have value.
Okay, any questions?
Any discussion on this issue?
Okay.
Hearing none, is there any objection to passing it as is? Okay, next.
Okay, the next thing is education. You'll see that we essentially combining bullet points 2 and 3 into one bullet point. So we change it to be support and encourage smaller, comma, more autonomous neighborhood schools and end it there. Get rid of the kind of specificity of K-12 neighborhood schools and reduce busing costs, which is argumentative. That is it on that section.
Any discussion? Hearing none, any objection to passing it? Pass it. Point of information, I would like to welcome our esteemed, distinguished regional rep, Dr. Jim Lahr. Today in North Carolina at their convention and drove on up.
Yeah, road trip with 2 automobile accidents, one on 95 just south of D.C. and one on the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Nothing like being stuck in traffic for an ungodly amount.
Gotta love the Mid-Atlantic States 995 corridor. Mr. Bliss, next.
Okay, now we go to vote 10, which is on page 5. Let's see. Crime and public safety gets a lot of changes. Got rid of the colloquialism free up hour and made it redirect law enforcement toward crimes against persons and property rather than we insert victimless crimes instead of nonviolent offenders. So what we're doing is getting rid of the resources by concentrating efforts language and making that just simply towards, and then replacing the nonviolent offenders with victims of crime.
Interesting view.
May I suggest either in addition to the words victimless crimes that the words political offenses either be added or replace this?
We can't amend it. We can debate it, but we can't amend
okay.
it.
Okay.
We can amend it to
right.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
But I've made a note of it because what we do is any comments that get made here, we keep for next year and we just throw it out there and
okay.
discuss it. So the next line gets changed. I'm sorry, Dean.
Well, again, for future reference, I think that I agree with Jerry Schneider that we should stop using the word victim of crime and start saying selfishly victim.
Selfishly to what?
Vices.
And to be fair to the program committee, we were searching for phraseology on that. So
we settled on victim of crime because we felt that in the common jargon, most people understand, have heard that phrase. Their phrase is rather specific to a libertarian idea, which is fine, but I'm just saying most people, if we hand them at a fair a program, they'll understand what a victimless crime is.
And I think so.
It's kind of a self-contradiction. There's no victim, there's no crime.
Incidentally, for the record, the late Earl Pierce came up with the term political offenses. And I will admit that that's where I picked it up from today.
I think what the impetus behind that is to I think the whole really we're concentrating on is the word offenders. So,
not
about
offenders
at
criminal.
No, but this was not. Legally, they are fair, but against the law. That's the part of the offender. Right, so in other words, take the bullet point as a whole and say we want to redirect law enforcement towards the crime against persons and property rather than against the crime. So, in other words, I guess kind of a half, it's a step towards
I hate to generalize at any point to try to think what other people think. But I think when we say victim of a crime, we mean that we're not harming someone else. But there are a lot of people who think that anyone who's harming themselves is being a victim. And that's one of the weakness of the people. But I could be wrong.
Is there more discussion on this?
They had started asking questions on only the first bullet point change. The second bullet point change actually shouldn't be presented here because we've already voted for it. That's my failure to not pull it out. So the thing on asset forfeiture, the second line, is not part of this vote. It's already been approved. The third bullet point, we changed this. Used to say, end the drug war, promote medical treatment rather than prison sentences for those who abuse alcohol and drugs. We would like it to just end with, rather than prison sentences for substance abuse. But now we have all the changes.
Okay.
No period.
Any more discussion on this?
There is up here.
Well, you have.
Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor of this passing this, say aye.
Aye.
All those against? Okay, very good. Next.
Okay. State government. We already approved the domestic spying language that was in the first bullet point. The second bullet point, get rid of initiate comprehensive reform of Maryland.
You want me to do it there?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So, initiate comprehensive reform of Maryland is actually the legislative process to eliminate preference is given to special interests. So the idea of the change is to eliminate preferences for special interests, which is a nut of this of that bullet point. And it also cleans up the language. I think it cleans up everything a lot.
Also, when you start getting into executive and legislative branch, that you can see the rise and start fogging over anyway. But that's, I think, what our rationale would be for.
Are you going to continue on that?
Yeah, I can continue on.
Go for it. Yes, I would love to. You were the secretary of the meeting. I believe you should be doing
that.
Spent all that time building consensus. Now I'm supposed to turn it over to the secretary.
Well, you certainly are. Where are we?
Yes, 11.
All right. Third bullet point. So we are going to establish and then add to change nonpartisan to an objective. We're just to process and then add to end gerrymandering and eliminating the stop policy.
The idea there was be less argumentative, and most people know what gerrymandering is. That was focusing on this kind of question is just better to simply say what we're targeting, rather than try to have an argumentative thing about, you know, politicians choosing who they vote for. Who votes for that?
Just look for compact districts.
Any discussion?
We have a point. So if you centralize government in Maryland, politics to respect the right of the community to govern itself, strike everything from and not micromanage every aspect of people's lives, which is micromanage. And political decisions should be made at the lowest feasible level. We add the word to encourage civic participation in county regional differences, which is that from encourage on the argument there. So I can read it how it works down.
Okay. Now, is there any discussion on this issue?
A question on that last one. Logic tells me to ask, are funded mandates okay?
Unfunded mandates is 4-5.
Yeah. It says unfunded mandates. But
eliminate unfunded mandates on local jurisdictions.
Yeah.
5.
But is that also implying that funded mandates are okay?
No.
No. Okay. Some of us don't see things that clearly.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection to passing this? Okay, next.
So we have property rights. And on bullet 2, we eliminated the second phrase in the paragraph. We hire property rights in the second bullet, and now we phase out government entities that compete against the private sector. And then eliminate such as the Maryland Economic Development Corporation. That would be a property specific, and most people don't know what Medco is.
I actually disagree with this situation. I think that for those people who know what Medco is, they would appreciate seeing it in our program, given the reason to vote for it. For those people who don't know what Medco is, this will explain to them that it is an example of this kind of government abuse.
Mm-hmm.
More discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No. No.
Failed. Next. Would you like a hand vote?
Yeah. To be fair. I think a hand vote would be a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Actually, take my vote off, please.
Okay.
I'm not
going to. Okay, get them up, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Pass them. 7?
Late vote.
All those. Let's try this one more time. All those in favor, get them up high, please.
Okay, let's change it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All those against. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 passes. Next. Any more, Mr. Simpson?
Land use transportation and the environment. So we already have 4.2 was we voted to eliminate the land value taxation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we've done this 4.5, mostly marked environmentalism, promote conservation and environmental protection. Prevent pollution and increase environmental awareness by making sure the state for environmental damage, removing striking therapy responsibility. 5 is your responsibility, if not 5. environmental damage through civil liability. And all the office switch order section there, is that already handled?
It shows that the how it would look. That is, I've already switched to under the current program. It starts off prevent pollution and increase environmental awareness with that second sentence.
Any discussion? Any objection to this? Next. Would you like to take a 5-minute recess?
Can I just make a comment? Last week, there were several people at Stu's that went over these, and they spent a lot of time going over these. So I think you should give them a big pat on the back, because there was a lot of argument, a lot of time spent on these, and they deserve it.
There was a lot of argument.
Before we get the candidate nomination, would you like to take a recess? It's up to you. I'm just throwing it out there.